Agreed.
Did Lisa leave already?
Lisa had to go to the fire.
Yeah. All right, we'd like to reconvene. Welcome to the regular session of this North Salt Lake City Council for October 3rd, 2023. We will turn it over to Stan Porter for our Pledge of Allegiance and prayer. Thanks, Stan. Thank you, Stan. At this time, we'd like to open it up for citizen comment. If there's anyone in the audience who would like to address the council, please come forward, state your name and address. Seeing none, we'll move on. Our next item is the introduction and swearing in of the 2023-24 North Salt Lake Youth Council, Youth City Council leadership. Natalie, do you want to do the introductions?
Yeah. I would like to invite Audrey up to do the introductions. I know some of the leadership for next year, but I don't know all of them, so I'd like Audrey to come up.
Good evening. I would love to. Okay, so serving as mayor, we have Alina Smith. Do you want them to come up here or like... you would come join me. Serving as our city manager, we have Kirstina Stanger. Krish Thoda is serving as our recorder. Our leadership chair and our activities chair are, our activities chair is missing tonight, and that is Peyton Otis. Our leadership chair is Bryn Burgess. Our service chairperson is Claire Plowman. And then our publicity chair is Dallin Jackson.
Thank you all for your willingness to serve. And I have the privilege of swearing you in, so I'll come do that.
We're going to do this all at once. So when I say state your name, that's your cue statement. So right arm to the square and repeat after me. I.
I.
State your name.
Do
solemnly affirm.
Do solemnly affirm.
That I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States. And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And that I will discharge my duties.
That I will discharge my duties.
Of my office with fidelity.
Of my office with fidelity.
Okay, let me ask you a question. What does it mean to have fidelity? Very good. We have a great tradition in the city with our youth city council, and I'm sure you'll follow in your steps and do a great job. We have certificates over here for you to sign and then pick one.
Is that you'll keep one and you'll turn one into a picture of you.
Hurry up, I can't hold my stomach in this room. This is the part where I shake everyone's hand. Our goal. Thank you again to the Youth City Council and also to the BBs for all the great work they do. Our next item is consideration of stock water inventory parts for purchase. John?
Most of the items that were included on this list are just small waterworks brass parts. I threw a couple pictures of what some of these parts look like, meter setters and compression couplings. The suppliers say that there's about a 30-week back order on most of these parts, so we're just trying to be proactive and order inventory well in advance of us running out. So we got bids from three different vendors, and Mountain Land Supply Company had the low bid of $39,285.62. And these items will come out of the water fund.
Can I say something, Mayor? Yeah. I saw this and I was kind of surprised at these prices. It kind of floored me because I'm thinking, well, I know what a 3/4 inch corp stop is. But then I looked it up and I realized it's kind of like Graybar, that they have products that are designed for their purpose and they're different than what you'd buy anyplace else.
Yeah.
And so something that might cost you $20 on Amazon is $64 on Mountain Land. But I assume these are all the brands like they sell, which are the...
Yeah, these are all, they were quoted all the same brand, which is a Ford meter box.
Ford, yeah, that's what I was going to say, the Ford brand, which is obviously, that looks like the top of the line or probably what's required for your industry.
Yeah, that's what our city standard is.
Right, right. So they still look like they're really overpriced, but I guess that's, they have to make
money. Everything went really expensive, especially after they did the lead-free brass. That really made brass fittings go up a lot.
Okay. All right. It looks
so good. So is this a supply chain issue or is it the product itself? I mean, the brass?
It's still related to supply chain issue stuff, but I mean, they are catching up.
Yeah.
There's still there's long delays to get parts.
Thank you for being proactive.
I'll make a motion if I can. I move that the City Council approve the purchase of the stock water inventory parts from Mountain Land Supply Company for the price of $39,285.62.
Second.
We have a motion, a second, and a sneeze.
And a gazoon type.
Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes.
Unanimous.
Yes. I was thinking, did I acknowledge that Lisa had to leave and we'll be back?
I don't know if you did yet.
Let me just say for the record that Councilmember Van Langeveld has left the meeting and we'll be back before we're done, probably. Next item is consideration of ordinance 2023-13, an ordinance amending Title I, Chapter 11 of the City Code, authorizing the City Council to award bids for certain types of construction activities under $250,000.
Thank you, Mayor. The Council will remember this was a continuation of an item that was on our agenda at the last City Council meeting. You can advance the slide. At that time, we had some concerns as a group that the language in the code may lead to relationships between staff and contractors that might have improper influence or cronyism in them. That language has been deleted. If you look in your packet at the actual exhibit to the ordinance, the only language that remains is language which defines this specific exemption from the bidding requirements. And so those definitions include what you see on your screen. The exemption would be up to $250,000, or that's another way of saying less, any projects that are less than $250,000, where we don't believe as a group that a plan or a bid document would necessarily contribute to the project or be a warranted expense, because those things are expensive. And again, this is only authorized by the City Council. So I think that there's very limited circumstances where I believe the city staff would bring a project like this to you, but we can envision, as we discussed a couple of times in preparation for this meeting tonight, there are situations where it makes sense for the city to save money, and where the cost of hiring a third party to prepare a design plan and go through a bidding process would add significantly to the cost of the project. And by that I mean 30 or 40% of the total project cost may increase because of those activities. I think there are some good justifications for this. The city council retains the authority to approve. Again, as I covered last time and this time, it could save thousands of dollars in public funds, and it can certainly save time and increase our effectiveness by doing sort of a direct award. So, and I would say one last thing on how this would normally occur. I think that the city staff is accustomed to obtaining bids. We have a mindset where we wish to preserve to the greatest degree possible public funds. And in cases where we believe the city can achieve its level of service and level of quality for the least amount of funding, that those are the proposals that we bring to you. So, so it's true that we don't always measure our success by how little money we spend as a city. Some cities do that. I don't think we do that very often. But we would measure the success of this program by how much money we could save and how effective we could be when it comes to small projects, where the city could save a significant amount of design money, consultant money, and other things. So again, I don't believe these exceptions would be used very often, but I do believe that our skilled, capable, professional staff members could bring good projects to the council for their consideration using this money-saving exception. So hopefully the changes we've made, taking out language that talked about, you know, contractors that we know who might have done similar work for the city previously, or that are performing work on a regular basis for us and that staff has a relationship with, all that language has been struck out of this ordinance. So it was there to sort of further define how the ordinance could be used, but I think after our meeting we agreed with the council that that language, it may lead to some of those improper relationships that you were concerned about. So we just decided, instead of to rewrite it, I decided to just strike through it. So that's all I had, I think.
Thank you, Ken, for addressing the concerns that we shared last time. And I think you've achieved what you had hoped to. I have two questions. With all due respect, I read the minutes, because Alisa Evan Langfeld had asked about why it was the $250,000 figure was used. If you can address that a little bit more thoroughly for me. And then secondly, in terms of the procedure, what I'm understanding by this ordinance is that there's an exemption, and the exemption will apply just to certain construction contracts. Those certain contracts will be selected by you because you know this is a project that is suitable. But what if the City Council does not, in its sole discretion, authorize? So I'm wondering if you want to say, if the City Council does not authorize, the competitive bidding requirements will be utilized.
Yeah, I think we certainly could add language that says that, but I think this section of the code really just deals with exemptions.
Uh-huh.
And so if it's not authorized, then it is subject to the rest of the purchasing code, which is a bigger chapter governing the practices for purchasing. So once the exemption is not approved,
It automatically goes
it's just
to debt.
It's just like a regular purchase.
Okay, that satisfies so, that then. We don't need to add that language.
Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt
that was
you.
It.
Okay, on the $250,000, I think that I picked that number. It's an arbitrary number. That is, there's nothing magical about it other than it's a little higher than maybe it would have been 5 years ago because costs are greater. And I think I looked at some of our projects that we have done in the past and that we have planned to do, and I think this is a good solid number. It's not too high. It could be lowered, and I don't think anyone on the staff would care if you wanted to lower the number, but I don't believe it's too high because of the costs of some of our projects.
The question that I've got is from a taxpayer's perspective.
Yes.
And how they would view that number.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of imposing the question for council members, too.
I don't know that they would look at, $200,000, yeah, that's much better. You know, it's the kind of the principle of the thing, if they're comfortable with the concept in general. I almost want to share a story here. Years ago, I was hired to manage BDO in Ogden when the Defense Depot closed down, and it was a joint venture with Ogden City, and so I worked with Ogden City employees, and they weren't happy about the mayor and council making the decision to bring in a private company. It was the Boyer Company. And so there was a little bit of conflict always with them. But they had awarded a company a demo contract to demolish buildings that had been determined to take down. And that contract was at a certain price, and then in 6 months it went up. And being new, I didn't know that. And a guy called me, and we had these open air warehouses, they called them. They had roofs, but they didn't have walls. And he wanted to store some fertilizer and stuff out of the, that couldn't get rained on. And so I thought, I knew they were going to be demolished down the road, but I thought, well, here's a chance to make some money. So I leased them for a couple of months, and the Ogden City employee sat there and didn't say a thing. And then after I signed the lease, he said, congratulations, you just cost us a lot of money because the demo cost is going up before this guy vacates. And I said, well, guess what? I don't work for Ogden City. I work for a private company. And I'll just bid it out to somebody else. And he came back the next day and said, they'll honor the old price. You know, and so I think of that in this situation. You know, the sometimes government ties itself in knots,
yeah.
And here's a chance. And I think that obviously the this project on the pond is the perfect example of here's a guy willing to come in and time and material, kind of let me see what I can do, and gives us a good price. And maybe we'll discuss the dog park later, and that may be another perfect place to do this.
Yeah.
Lisa, I don't know if this will give you any comfort with the figure that Ken set, but there's a corollary in state procurement code. State procurement code, of course, doesn't apply to cities. We're able to establish our own procurement rules, but the exception in the state procurement code was established in 2003 at $125,000. With an escalator of approximately 3% per year. And if you do the math on that and run it 20 years forward, it comes out at just above $225,000. So the proposal is within that same range.
Any further comment? Okay, I'll entertain the motion.
I move that the City Council approve Ordinance Number 2023-13, an ordinance amending Title I, Chapter 11 of the City Code, authorizing the City Council to award bids for certain types of construction activities under $250,000.
I'll second it.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Natalie, we'll start with you.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. I am concerned that I've become one of those old guys now that has to tell a story every time. Okay, next item, consideration of resolution 2023-38R, a resolution authorizing the city to contract with Green Summit Development for the renovation of the Eaglewood Village Detention Pond for an amount not to exceed $100,000. Ken?
Thank you. This item was also on the last council meeting agenda. If you advance the slide, this is the plan that Green Summit Development put together for us. And as the mayor mentioned, it's kind of a time and materials project, but the cost estimate for the project is $76,700. We believe the work can be done this year. It includes Phragmites removal, which is a significant problem in this pond. It also will, we will remove and dispose of the wooden fishing pier that hasn't been attached to anything for 3 or 4 years. And a new permanent rock dike will be placed in the pond. That's a very effective way to have, to be able to allow the public to get out on the water with rock dikes, and you'll see that in lots of facilities in Utah. I've requested an approval by the council of up to $100,000 in the event that we have contingencies that we often have in projects. If you'd rather not approve an amount up to $100,000, we can also come back to the council for approval of change orders and things. But I think it's probably the staff's recommendation as a group that we provide some contingency. And of course, we will spend less than what you allow if we do not need the funds. So that's my recommendation. I believe the resolution is written so that you can, if you approve the resolution as written, you'll approve an amount not to exceed $100,000.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I just have one question. The elevation of the boulder rock dike, is that at an elevation where it will be underwater when this is used as a retention basin? Or is it going to be up in the air quite a ways when it's...
That's a great question. I think that's one of the things we'll work with the contractor on. But my expectation is that during normal operation of the pond... it will be above water, maybe 2 or 3 feet.
Okay.
And in a storm event, it may be submerged, but wouldn't normally be submerged if we're not having a storm.
Right, and its elevation should be at there's a normal level for the lake now. So, yeah, right. That makes sense. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah.
And that under a flood situation, it'll be underwater, which is fine. We just post a sign that don't try fishing during a flood event.
Yeah, so that's a good question, Stan. And the other thing is, how deep typically does it run, this pond? How much water do we typically have in there when it's not a storm event?
Well, I can probably answer that best, right, Chief? Several years ago when we had this plan to put fish in here, the state required us to measure the depth. And so the chief and I took the canoe out there and we dropped the anchor a couple of places to measure it. And it was around 18 to 22 feet deep in places. So the fish will stay alive in the wintertime, basically. That's what they were concerned about.
The what did you say?
The fish.
Will stay alive.
Stay alive, yes. So that's why it had to be certain deep. So yeah, out towards the middle, I think we measured about 20 feet, wasn't it, Chief? I don't know, maybe.
It was deeper than your anchor rope, that's all.
Great to know.
And yeah, that's a great question.
In a severe weather event, we would hope people would stay away from the pond, too. So.
They all run up to the pond near your house.
Deer Hollow.
Yeah. I will say, in answer to that question, though, it's a little bit more than what you asked. This pond does have an overflow device on it, and so that on this drawing, it's on the kind of the bottom corner where you see that concrete pathway kind of pointed towards the pond. That's where the outfall is, and so it connects to another larger pond to the south. So so this will not flood over its banks or anything, but will overflow into a secondary facility.
Mayor? I want to thank Ken for doing this, because he took it kind of as a project and walked us there. We saw how it could be fixed, and it's come to fruition. So I think that's really great that we're where we are, and it's been something that we've needed to do for a long time. So it's congratulations, Ken. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments?
Just a comment. I have a daughter and son-in-law that used to fish here regularly, and they're excited to get back. So even with the 2-week delay, we still believe it can be completed this fall.
We do.
Okay, thank you.
All right, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make it. I recommend approval of Resolution 2023-38R, a resolution authorizing the city to contract with Green Summit Development for the renovation of the Eaglewood Village Detention Pond in an amount not to exceed $100,000.
I'll second that motion.
Thank you. Motion and second. Any further discussion? Ted?
Aye.
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 Thank you. And that is approved. Next item is discussion of a dog park and potential partnership with Woods Cross City.
I'm on my best behavior.
David?
All right. Well, I didn't necessarily prepare, like, there's not really a lot of new information as far as what you guys have already seen. I did attend their council meeting a couple weeks ago. Good conversation with them. They've asked us to do a bunch of different things. We've kind of done it in different stages. We got actually just the trail built last week for it, which is good. But the good thing, I guess, to report back really is that we've decided that the steering committee worked with them. They have got one councilman, and then their public works director will serve on that. And Ted and I will, from our side of things, since he's with Parks and Arts. We're meeting on the 16th, and we'll just start going through some of the different things. We've already put in for a grant to try to get restrooms. I actually haven't even told Ken that yet. Woods Cross actually filed that, so that would be really nice if we could get some extra money there. And really, I think what you guys just approved, too, with this us designing this, like TJ and I actually designing this and going through this process is going to save the city a lot of money. I think this is a really great way to do it. And going forward, I hope that Woods Cross really steps up and opens their pocketbooks a little bit and is a good partner in this. So, but I don't really know how else to report anything with that until we really start talking in a little bit more detail. So, questions?
Well, I might just add that first, I really appreciate David taking this project on with Woods Cross City. Sam Christensen, who was our assistant public works director, is now Woods Cross public works director, so they have a relationship, and I appreciate that. I think this is a really great opportunity for both cities, and I'm hopeful that the four-person task force that's been put together can really come to some agreement between the two cities that both cities will be willing to share in the cost equally and be committed. So I just wanted to to say that Woods Cross, there, Woods Cross is not perhaps as unified in their city council as we are on this project, and so that might become a challenge for Ted and for David a little bit. But I do think that they recognize overall the need for the project, and that it will serve the west side residents of both cities really well in the location that it's being planned in. So it's also, as a reminder, it's on a piece of UDOT property, which I think UDOT's been really great to work with on allowing both cities to enter into a long-term arrangement on a piece of their property. So
I have a question about this. Is the group to determine who's going to contribute to the dog park, or are you guys going to begin to plan it? Because if we're paying for it all by ourselves, I don't want them to help us plan it. I want them to just go away and say we're losers.
So,
I am behaving myself.
David can add to this. I do think the purpose of this four-person group is to work through all of those questions, to talk about designs, facilities, improvements, and sharing.
And if they get the grant for the bathrooms, then maybe they don't have to pay exactly the same amount we do. But, like, I don't want them to come in, and like the soccer fields, and say, yeah, we want to pay for some of this, and then 15 years later, they still haven't.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say what I said to their council. When their council said to me, basically, well, your city's bigger than ours, maybe you should pay more. And I said, well, the way I view it is this is in the very corner of our city, and it really is probably for only half of our city, so I still think it's a 50-50. That's it. At the end of it, it's your guys' decision. To me, I believe it should be a 50-50 split.
Is it their argument that they don't have the funds? Can we get to the bottom of that and see if it's accurate?
They had to raise taxes this year. They had a truth in taxation.
Yeah, they raised.
And how much are we looking at that would be 50%?
It really depends. I mean, we're trying to get grants for the trees. We're trying, our crews would be doing a lot of the work for the water lines. We're really just trying to do everything. I actually like this project, really. I'm proud of it because we're really just trying to do this like the best way I would, talking to a resident or anybody, and say, like, no, we're really putting together a good park and trying to do it for the best price and do good quality work. But I mean, they've already come back and they don't want the vinyl covered chain link fence. They just want regular chain link. So no. I mean, that's where I was starting to worry. So that's where I think that the committee will be good, but the committee could also be difficult if we're just trying to.
Well, and also there's two factors here. One is building the facility and then maintaining it.
That's right.
And the maintaining, you know, we've had discussions of contracting that out.
Mm-hmm. They agreed with that.
Yeah, but it creates an ongoing liability, mm-hmm. and there's always that temptation that, you know. What North Salt Lake will do it anyway, you know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we need
to. We do it by an interlocal agreement between the two cities?
Well, we were going to draft a letter of understanding kind of going forward. We're working on that right now.
Okay.
Wanted to kind of work on that when we meet in a couple weeks.
I think we just go forward with good faith, make a good faith effort. And if it doesn't pan out, We'll use the UDOT property on the south side of our city instead and move it. I'm kidding. No.
So we're sort of in the $400,000 to $600,000 range, maybe, depending on how much of it we do in kind. And
yeah, I think we.
I agree with David. There's a lot of cost savings. So that's really the scale of what we're looking at. Probably $250,000 each, maybe. With some elbow grease on both sides, you know. And then we did broach the subject of ongoing maintenance, and David's recommendation to all of us, including to Woods Cross, was that we hire the maintenance of the park out to a third party that just comes in and does that. It needs to be done almost on a daily basis if it's a heavily used dog park.
Yeah. So we talked to, I mean, we toured a bunch of different facilities, talked with different people. The Draper Park that I showed you guys last time I presented on this. And what we've been kind of told is once a week's what you want to do. Because if they see people in there every day, then people don't clean up after themselves, is what we were told by other cities. So once a week, and they come in and kind of just do a full cleanup. But, you know, I don't know how much it's worth getting in the weeds right now. If you have a restroom, who's stocking toilet paper? You know, there's a lot of other stuff that's going to come into play. And it's complicated, and... But, I mean, I really think, I mean, I'm not even a dog guy, but I still think if the city wants one, this is an awesome way. Working with another city like this is commendable if we could pull it off. It's difficult, but.
One other idea that I was just thinking of, I'm just recently a dog owner, so now I really care about the dog park, right? And so that makes a difference if you do own one. But maybe we could have a portal or something where dog owners could donate to the dog park maintenance fund.
We did talk about trying to find somebody to donations or do something different too, and maybe that's stuff we could bring up in the committee.
Because then the Woods Cross residents also could, those who use the park could actually contribute as well if they would be willing.
There's a lot of different directions. We've our conversations have gone all over the place. Maybe giving naming rights to somebody who wants to donate or something like that, you know. I don't know.
I appreciate your good work and your patience, and I know that this may not turn out the way we want to, but I really do think you should move forward and just do the best job. And if it doesn't work out with them, then come back to us and ask for more money.
Yeah, like I don't know. I'd be, we have other locations that we could do this on if we don't want to play with them. That's the way I'd say it.
Okay. Thank you. Next item is approval of the joint city council and planning commission minutes of September 12th. And I didn't have any corrections to them.
I read them. I make the motion we approve the minutes of the joint session with the
Can
Planning Commission.
Can I ask a question really fast?
Oh,
Dee,
sorry.
How many S's are in your name? Okay.
Two. I might.
And two L's.
No, I was going to
three
say
L's, actually.
I was spelling it wrong in my...
It might be corrected too. It says Councilman Porter arrived at 6:13 p.m. Well, I joined electronically at 6:13 p.m.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah, I haven't put electronically in there because then we'll know you're out of town.
Yeah, they'll know that I wasn't physically there. But
yeah,
I was there.
Okay, I make the motion to approve the joint work session between the City of North Salt Lake City Council and Planning Commission with the amendment that Stan Porter had joined the meeting a little late electronically because he was out of town. So that's the amendment.
Okay, do we have a second?
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any further comment? All in favors?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you, that's approved. Next item is approval of the City Council minutes of September 19th. And again, I didn't have any corrections to those.
I think I did, yeah. Just turn it off. On line 314, it says, Councilmember Baskin asked if this could be done as a plat amendment as opposed to an ordinance. And I believe I asked if this, I want to say Councilmember Baskin asked why this was done as a plat amendment as opposed to an ordinance. That's really what I wanted to know. So instead of saying, just say why this was done as. Thank you.
Okay. Any other corrections?
I'll make the motion to approve the minutes as amended for the September 19th, 2023 City Council meeting.
I'll second it.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you. That is that passes. Next item is action items. Nice to see some come off there. Do we have any comments, questions on any action items?
Well, I know that we're going to address the sign ordinance, so that's one that we can discuss momentarily.
Stan, Natalie, any?
No concerns.
Okay. Let's go to council reports. Ted? Start with you.
One second. Okay. All right. A few, three items. One, I am not able to be here in 2 weeks for vacation.
I think I'll be gone too. What's the
17th?
October 17th.
Oh, no, I'll be here.
So we have a
corner.
Thank you.
Okay. Two, Town Center, Center Street, a lot of conversation about parking. You know, we just looked at the minutes of our joint City Council Planning Commission work session, and I will confess that I don't know the details of the parking issues that relate to the school and that relate to pick up and drop off times. A standard thing that happens around schools is that there's time of day restrictions. No parking between the hours of, you know, 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. on a school day. And that can help the situation. That kind of time of day restriction, if it would be helpful, I'm not sure either way. I'm not familiar enough with the dynamics on the day of on a school morning or afternoon at that church. But that kind of solution seems more like a scalpel, whereas you know, an extensive amount of off-street parking is more like a bulldozer, sure. And so I guess my question is, does it make sense? Has that already been discussed? If it hasn't been discussed by staff or there is a reason to not do that, would love to know that. If that has the prospect of potentially helping that situation, that parking issue during that critical time period, maybe it's just on Center Street, I'm not really sure. I'm looking for a little bit of advice of, again, I guess two questions. One, has that been looked at before? And two, if not, what is the right way to consider that possibility as a way to address some of the issues in the town center? Comments by Karen or Ken or anybody on the council?
I'll just add and this is just kind of, you know, driving by at 30 miles an hour, and you look down the street and it's packed.
Yeah.
And to me, that kind of screams like, oh, bad design.
Center Street.
Or even the diagonal by the daycare. Mm-hmm. So one of the goals is to attract some kind of, like, it would be nice to have a restaurant right there or something. Well, in the evening, if the residents are lining the streets.
That's a great sign of vitality. No,
I'm thinking that if I'm going there to a restaurant and it looks like there's nowhere to park,
it's too popular, I don't want to go there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that is a great point, and another, I think, case for thinking about how we manage that resource.
Yeah.
And maybe just kind of, you can park a car there as long as you want. Once you get your car there, you can leave it there for a week. Well, that doesn't help a town center either.
Yeah.
So.
I've been on the Downtown Alliance for years, and parking is one of those, you know, why don't people come downtown? Parking, you know. And the truth of the matter is there's plenty of parking. It's just kind of a hassle or hard to figure out or that, you know, but the perception is there's no parking. You know, I go downtown, I can't find parking. I can go to Fashion Place Mall and I know I'll find parking, you know. And so sometimes that perception becomes reality. And
yeah.
I looked down there and there's no parking. But, and so that was my comment. Here's a chance to correct that issue. But parking is incredibly expensive. And, you know, I get when Jess says, you know, even if we charge for $30,000 a stall to build, there's just, the payback doesn't, takes years, you know.
I think that the parking needs for a tenant or a resident are different than the parking needs for retail. And I think, you know, having a different strategy for those different needs makes a lot of sense to me. And it's, that's, I think that's, you know, Town Center 101, that you reserve your on-street for your customers, right?
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's really an expensive proposition to solve this problem with suburban parking supply kinds of standards. Look, the parking supply question, we should look at that too. But almost no matter how you slice it, it seems like we've got to take a look at how we manage the on-street, almost no matter what. For school day issues, for retail vitality, for event management. If, you know, we have a big event in a few years at our brand new Hatch Park. This is just something that I feel like we need to, as a city, we have to take a look at how we're going to manage our on-street parking supply in a town center. It's an inevitable thing that we have to deal with. At least we have to take a look at it and decide purposefully that we are not going to deal with it. But we can't just ignore that question. That's where I'm coming from on this. I think that it's just something we have to kind of work through deliberatively.
So you asked a couple of questions, I think, directed at the staff. I don't think specifically we've discussed in detail the possibilities at Orchard Elementary to utilize or share parking that might exist there. I think that was your question.
Or time of day restrictions.
Yeah. We have not looked specifically at Orchard Elementary. We do have time of day strategies identified in the general plan, and even in the parking code, we have those things adopted.
Does that mean that we just have it as a tool we could utilize?
And it has been utilized, and I'll turn this over to Sherry because she probably has something to say about this, maybe. But the solution, you know, what's the right way to go about it, I think is a bigger question for the town center overall. And I would say we're going to attempt to answer that through the town center study that's on, that's going on right now. We're about to get a draft of the report. You know, we've, through WFRC, we've hired a consultant to look at retail and retail leakage and retail possibilities, and we'll have a set of recommendations.
Parking issues as well.
I think they will be helping us with parking. Yeah.
Okay.
It may not be the primary emphasis of their study, but I think we'll learn some things about it. But I also think the staff has discussed it, particularly since we had the Town Plaza project phase two come up. And then I believe there's a work session item. Does it address parking at all? Do we have something on your radar? I can't remember. That's why.
Well, on our October 17th agenda, we're supposed to be talking about the bike lane pilot, the town center.
It's not really parking.
And general plan update, those types of things. And I'm wondering if we might want to postpone that so that Council Member Knowlton is in attendance.
Probably.
But I think that the parking is... The solution to parking is probably not a single solution. There's multi levels that need to be addressed. Like, are there certain areas of town that parking should be restricted for, you know, during daytime hours on 130 East or Center Street? Maybe it's a 2-hour parking limit. Maybe 130 East should be a one-way street so we can still have parking on both sides. Maybe we need to figure out the urban design of that block and the future plans for the full build out when it's redeveloped and where the best location for shared parking would be and try to come up with strategies to help developers achieve those strategies so that we have the right amount of parking for the residents that are going to live there, but also not too much parking that is being wasted because there isn't the daytime population or the draw from the commercial stuff. And then there's the idea of, and it is true that when there's a scarcity of parking, it generates this vitality and it's like, oh, that's a cool place to go. There's nowhere to park. I want to be there. What's going on there? And it draws people into it. So there's not one solution. I think it's multifaceted, and I think it's going to take a lot of analysis on our part to look at all of those tools.
The one thing I would add is that as I look at the town center, and maybe this is what you're alluding to with the school, I see a lot of parking lots, and I don't think we've ever looked at a project that would first do an inventory of where those lots are and how much parking is available, and approaching landowners. There's some institutional landowners, there's some private landowners, there's some retail landowners, and then there's us who will have large parking lots at Hatch Park and City Hall. And so that's part of that multi-strategic approach that Sherry's talking about is really what's really out there right now and what arrangements can be made. You know, the local government's trust has, they probably have 200 parking spaces or more, maybe 300.
Yeah.
And seldom. And I know they're pretty territorial, but we haven't really approached them in a serious way. So.
Yeah, so there's, sorry, council member. So there's a lot of different things we could look at, right? There's shared parking between parcels, between future developments. There's district parking that we could explore. There's how we manage our on-street. And I guess the thing that I would layer into that is the when do we look at those things. And I think it makes sense for us to begin the process for those things that we can tackle now so that can inform other kinds of decisions as they become firmer. And so it's on the development side, it's tricky because there's developers and their own timeline, and there's the developers that haven't come forward yet or that may not come forward for a few years. You're right, those questions are trickier in terms of when is the right time to look at something like a district parking. But the question of how we manage on street, we can get our strategy. There's no reason to wait on that, in my opinion. That's something that we just have more control over. So I don't know how I leave that. Do I? Is there another council member that has an interest in putting this on a work session or an agenda?
I have that interest.
Okay. So maybe we can just leave that with staff to think about what would you suggest in terms of a next step.
Great.
All right. Last item. Our representative, Melissa Garf Ballard, texted, I think, all of us about refugee questions at Orchard Elementary School. And I just feel like we need to
She did not contact me, did she?
We just need to get back to her.
She did. I did get that refugee.
Okay.
Yeah, I got the same thing.
And maybe the thing to do is I will forward some correspondence individually to each council member, and we can just think about that.
Cool.
We won't talk about it here tonight.
Okay.
It may not be something that there's any city role at all.
Yeah.
But I think that we just owe it to our representative to just get back to her.
Sure.
So,
good idea.
Rather
so
than
you
talking,
forward the email to everybody that may not have got it.
Yes, I'll do that.
We'll talk about it. We can.
That's great.
Among ourselves.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And if you'd like city staff to weigh in on whatever this problem is, you can include us.
Yep. We will do that for sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Lisa.
The city. The golf committee deals with a lot of issues. You all know that. We've got trespassing, vandalism,
dogs,
theft. There's a lot of things that happen there. Not dramatically, not in astounding numbers, but it's happening. So the mayor and I were contacted by Lynn Larson, so I went and met with him. And what I think we probably need to do is explain the whole concept of taxpayers pay into lots of things, but it doesn't make it their private right to use them, right? And I don't think that that's a concept. This man's a lawyer, retired, and I don't understand how he doesn't get that concept. But I met with him, saw the problem. I completely concur with what you said to him. I'm sure you probably agree with what I said. But this is a problem that we're going to have it continue with the golf course and the water issues because people want it to be lush and green, and we can't. Now that brings me to the second issue, and this is something for Karen in terms of the water. My husband has come to know that there's a water engineer named Greg Segneler in Woods Cross. And he's doing a lot of data research, a lot of surveying of the aquifers that are collapsing on the west side of our town. And when my husband told me about it, he was quite alarmed. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, maybe this Zegmiller could come and explain to us the situation and why it is important, why it is significant. So I wanted to know if there are people be interested. But I wanted to read this, what he said, because he says it far better than I can. He said about this area, you are losing storage. That is to say, the space to even store the water if you had it. It also means that you are over-withdrawing water. It is unsustainable in the long term. It also could result in saline water moving into your groundwater supply without the pressure of the fresh water pushing it back against the saline water. Toward and that water then could move toward the east. It involves cones of depression, which we know, a probable overlap of the pumping zones, pressure changes in the subsurface, and the presence or absence of the non-contiguous confining beds. He's very concerned about that. So when you have an aquifer collapse in those separate strata that once they collapse, they're done. they don't fill back up again, is what he's saying. So maybe this is something we could have Karen talk about, because we're so concerned about water. And we've had pumps that we've had to repair at considerable cost because of that torquing, the torsion that's happening. Yeah. So
Karen's addressed this in the past, but the irony to me is that the solution is to have everyone in Eaglewood water their lawns more. Is that right, Karen?
Not what I said.
Are you going to answer? I was going to say we're participating with Greg Signaler.
Yeah, so Greg Signaler is a consultant who acts as the city engineer for Woods Cross City. So there is a ongoing effort. It's a kind of a technical advisory committee made of all the city engineers or the city's consultants, and also water districts. So, for example, Weber Basin is part of this committee. And we've been meeting I think our first meeting was 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And Greg is kind of the organizing head, primarily because Woods Cross has been hit the hardest. But this is exactly kind of the things that I've been talking to you about for quite some time. And the soils that collapse, that don't come back, that's what's caused the settlement of those pump stations, but it's not a collapse of the entire aquifer. So don't be too alarmed. Just be as alarmed as I've told you to be.
And I know that Linda Freitas, who's with the Great Salt Lake, she's now getting involved. Mm-hmm. Maybe she's been with this group.
Well, and there's a number of factors, and there is the risk of having saline water pull back into our freshwater aquifers as those water levels decline. So there are a number of us who are very broad-ranged. And as you probably know, my specialty has always been water. But I do many, many things. And then there are those of us in this group who are very specialized. Some of the consultants are those that I would hire for very specific advice on some of these kinds of questions, because it's all they do. And so there's a really, I think we've got a really good group. And part of what we've been working on is pulling all of our data and determining these water levels and looking at what those pressure changes, and the pressure changes underground are whether or not those wells continue to be free-flowing. And that's just a symptom of the water level. There really aren't physical changes occurring underground that affect that. You just don't get artesian flow when the water levels drop. So we're very concerned. It's a really big issue. And I think that, we're all of us are kind of in the boat together. You know, all of the cities and the water suppliers. And we're all really working proactively to make sure that we can do everything that we can so that we can kind of protect what is ultimately the most important resource we have, except for parking.
Great answer, Karen.
except for parking. So, but you can survive without parking. I will say that. Let me just add one other thing. There's really a lot of effort in the South Davis cities to talk about aquifer recharge. Centerville is actually doing some projects where they're injecting water into the aquifer in that location, so we're going to do more of that. I think we have to press on with water conservation, which is something that it's hard to believe, but our residents in good years like the one we're in, they don't believe in it. In bad years, they're all on board. So it's just a public education thing, but over time we really do have to be careful. I appreciate you bringing it up.
Well, this harkens back to my original comment with regard to meeting with Lynn Larson, because he said to me, we don't have water problems anymore. So I want to have my lawn green. And I want this mound right next to me. I don't want it weeded. I want it grassed and mown, because now we have water.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Stan.
Well, I don't have a lot to say. I'll just bring up that last Thursday I was able to attend the Jordan River Commission recognition event, and they took us on a tour of a facility that's being built just south of the West Valley Cultural Center, and across the street from 33rd South. And it looks like a really cool facility. It's partly the Tracy Aviary's got a building there now, and they've got a big mound, and they've got some really cool trees that I'd never seen before. They're pine trees that kind of all squiggly and go up. I got some pictures of them if anybody wants to see them. But it was really really quite fascinating to see what they're building there. And it's just under construction now, so it's not completed, but they hope to have it done real soon. And it's really going to be a good thing. So, and then they had the recognition event. I was thinking I was the longest person there, but then I realized that Mayor Jenny Wilson was there when I was there at the beginning, but she doesn't show up at the meetings very much anymore, but she's still obviously on the commission. She's still on the commission, so then I had to take a back seat thinking, no, I haven't been there as long as her. So anyway, I think that's about all I have.
Thank you, Stan. Natalie?
I just want to do a shout out for the BBs on what a great job they're doing with the Youth Council. They are amazing, and it is running very, very well. The new leaders are going to be great. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Elisa, welcome back.
Thank you. And for the minute takers, just note that I left about 7 and got back about 8:15.
Did they sing well, though?
They did. It was packed. There were not enough seats at all, and parents were standing in the aisles, so it's fine. They did great. I just have two things. First thing is, tomorrow, with a few members of the Health and Wellness Committee, we're attending the Get Healthy Utah Stakeholders Conference, and we'll talk about that as a committee, and then I'll be able to report any action we're taking on that later. And the second thing is the Legacy Trail, if this may have been brought up before I got back, but the Legacy Trail is completed, the one around Legacy Park, and it is beautiful. And there has already been really positive feedback from the community. I see people using it, and I have personally had at least over 15 people say thank you, that they're really excited and love it. So thank you for everyone that contributed and helped make that happen, staff and council as well. That's it.
Thank you. Jamie, do you have anything for us?
No, I don't have anything. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. I don't have anything, except I want to say one thing. And it really pains me to say, okay, David, Franson, you were right about something. But I was in Vermont and New Hampshire last week, and they don't have garbage cans anywhere. And you have to pack your garbage out, and there is no garbage anywhere. Nobody litters. And David's made the point, if we just took all the garbage cans out of our parks, we wouldn't have a problem with am I misquoting you, David, at all? But anyway, it was kind of, I know it's counterintuitive, but it was kind of interesting to see in action. And I even talked to a park ranger, like, where can I throw this away? And they're like, you got to haul it out. And so that really actually does work. I don't know that we should go there, but it was kind of an interesting point. Ken?
Yeah, just one thing before I do anything on my report. We skipped Heidi.
I thought we'd, because that's the exciting part, it'll wake us all up. And
it's pretty exciting if you want to have her. She'll be mad that I brought that up, but we did skip her, if you want to have her report.
I could see her over there fuming about it. So.
I think we should hear from her.
Yeah.
Do you want to do Heidi now?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, Heidi.
That'll be my report, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Wendy. Thank you for noticing that. I thought I was going to sneak out really quickly and go along with my original plan, which was to not present at all, ever. But that's okay, because we've got some interesting stuff to look at anyways. I know who's in charge, right? So just some numbers for the first 2 months of the fiscal year. As I always say at this time, not a lot is happening because the revenues that we do receive get pushed back to June because that's their collection period. So that's why we're looking at these very awful looking fund balances in the general fund. So at the close of August, the general fund balance was negative $2,100,297. Obviously, that will true up as we receive collections throughout the year, and especially when property tax collections come in December for November. But in comparison, last fiscal year at end of August, we were at $998,402 in the negative in the general fund. And that differential there is mostly related to the ARPA funds because we received those in July. So we're really tracking well with last year is what I wanted to illustrate with those numbers. We are still experiencing really high interest rates, as I'm sure everyone's noticed. And the Federal Reserve's meant last week didn't raise rates, though all evidence is, and every report that I can read says that there will be another rate increase before the end of the year, and to expect them to stay high through the end of next year, which was different than we were hearing this time last year. So I don't know what to think. I don't have a crystal ball, but these are the two things that are really impacted as far as our day-to-day finances, is we are receiving a ton more interest revenue. So in July and August of 2021, on our fund balance or our reserves of $25.5 million, we collected $14,381 in those 2 months. Now, in July and August of 2023, those 2 months, we collected $254,000 in interest, so on a $28.5 million balance. So on the opposite end, our impact fee revenues, which are not missing revenues, are just delayed. We know we're going to get them, but we are seeing kind of the opposite. So in July and August of 2021, we had those first 2 months collections of $234,468, middle of the road then between the two numbers there for last year. And then we are only at $19,670 in impact fee collections for those first 2 months. And I've taken a look at September as we're closing out that month, and I'm looking at those numbers, and it's still consistent and low. So were there any questions about any of the financial reports that were provided?
I kind of zoned out there for a minute. So why are the impact fee revenues for July and August 2023 so low?
We haven't had the development, so we don't have building permits coming in at the same rate as we did a couple years
okay.
ago.
That's
so
okay.
Again, we expect to have that revenue at some point. We just are not recognizing it now.
I guess there's
Thank
no
you.
More questions. Thank you, Heidi.
Thank you.
Last, best. So, Ken, did you not have anything else?
I don't think I do have anything.
Okay. And we don't need a closed session. I think we're there.
Well, wait. I thought we were going to talk about the sign ordinances. Isn't that on the agenda?
It's that memo was part of the action item list, so it was
okay.
A response to an action item was the memo.
Oh, that was it. Okay,
signage.
That's it.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk. Okay.
Yeah, if you have questions, we can.
I just wondered if we wanted to have a discussion on that. My understanding then is that the city doesn't enforce the sign ordinances on temporary campaign signs. If they're in the park strip, in terms of having it be completely egalitarian, city doesn't get involved, correct?
Only
except in where it's places like stop signs and sight spots.
Where
and
it creates a safety hazard.
Yeah.
We've pulled those signs in.
Okay.
And we call the candidates and say, we have your sign.
Although I must say this, as all of us who've campaigned, the sign piece is really the hardest piece, because if you're doing it right, you're getting permission and you're not doing it in the park strips. And most people don't know that, but I notice it. And it makes me think, it's a litmus test for me.
Well, just so you know, so as a city staff, we do go over that with all the candidates,
yeah.
And we've had a few emails go out during this election cycle about signage, because we've had questions come up. And anyway,
I see it more in other cities. But I always think that same thing. It's like four out of five vacant lots are supporting that guy, you know, or six out of 10 telephone poles like that, you know. And so I think it's almost a negative.
Well, and it's also, you know, when you know the property is owned by a developer that's wanting to develop something on the property, and think, yeah, somebody's put several signs on that property, and they must know that developer and got his permission. Under what circumstances?
Yeah. Or there's no way that that person has permission to put that sign there, because when I asked, he's not allowing anyone to. Yeah. That kind of situation, too.
All right. Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All right. Thank you. We are adjourned.